Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
It's time now for the Friday Gathering, and this week I'm joined by Fianna Fáil TD for Clare and Minister of State for Fisheries and the Marine, Timmy Dooley, Independent Ireland TD for Roscommon Galway, Michael Fitzmaurice, Editor of the Journal.ie, Sinead O'Carroll, and Research and Policy Analyst with Social Justice Ireland, Michelle Murphy. And you're all welcome. Thanks for being with us today. We're going to start with the principal of a school attended by two of the children who were deported to Nigeria this week. And that principal has said that staff and pupils have been left devastated. Five children and 30 adults we know were removed from Ireland on that chartered flight. This is part of the Department of Justice's new crackdown on enforcing immigration rules. And Kieran Cronin is principal of St James's Primary School in Dublin. He spoke to Morning Ireland earlier and described the impact of the boys' departure on their friends at that school.
We had to sit down with the two classes and explain to them that, look, your friends are gone. They're not coming back. It was so upsetting, And it was only yesterday we have the school meals program in the school here, and one of the boys' lunch was left in the crate, and one of the pupils picked it up and said, where do we put this? And that's when the conversation really opened up, that the poor teacher had to explain, look, unfortunately, he's not coming back.
That's Kieran Cronin, the principal of the school. Timmy Dooley, we had Gary Gannon in here earlier on from the Social Democrats, and he said there should be an amnesty on children being deported, children who are settled here, who are in school. He suggested for more than a year. Do you think that's a fair suggestion?
No, I don't. I think if a country has an immigration system of which an asylum process is part of it, and it's rules-based, then you've got to follow the rules. And like, there are two outcomes, unfortunately, to an asylum process. You're either accepted or you're not. So if somebody comes here and they're found not to be in compliance, difficult decision for sure, but not to be in compliance with the rules around asylum, well, then the only answer to that is that they have to leave. Now, they're given an opportunity in all circumstances. They're assisted if they so wish to return of their own volition when they have failed to receive asylum, having gone through an appeals process. Deportation is an issue of last resort, and people are given advance notice. They're given time to get their affairs in order, and they're deported. And that is an integral part of an asylum process and an immigration system to control the flow of migration.
Could Timmy be handled better from a communication point of view with the school? Like, those children going in, distressed because they saw that family being packed up in the Red Cow, then the other children looking at the empty seats, you know, and the lunch left there, the hot school lunch, it just seems very harsh.
It does when you take that in isolation. But I mean, the state has a responsibility to those who gain asylum here to ensure that the system is fair and is being seen to be fair. And you talk about amnesties and that's all right. But unfortunately, part of the flow of migration is driven by the illegal movement of people and by people traffickers. And if Ireland's system is seen to be flawed or open to arbitrary interpretation, well, then I can assure you, as night follows day, we'll see very significant influxes of people into the country again. And so we have to work in tandem with our European partners, and we have a responsibility in a rules-based system to apply the controls. Could more work be done at the schools? Perhaps there could. Perhaps the school could have been flagged to the schools in advance to ensure that traumatic episode is addressed more fairly. But I think, and I heard some of the reportage today, this idea of packing people up, it's not done in that kind of an humanitarian way. People are, it's indicated to them in advance, they will know when the flights are taking place, they'll know well in advance that deportation is the end result of the process. Mm-hmm. Now, where there were issues in the past, it was too slow to make those decisions, and I get it. And I know families that have been deported, and I've worked with them in my own constituency, where they were here for a considerable period of time and their applications hadn't been processed. Now, my understanding is, in this case, some of these relate back to 2021, when deportations effectively stopped because of the COVID situation. So there's some legacy issues here that there's a catch-up on. And we did do an amnesty before, which addressed a whole myriad of people who'd been here for a very prolonged period of time, and where, in the view of the state, it it would have been a major upheaval in the lives of people who were here 6, 7, and 8 years.
Okay, I just want to bring in some of the others here now. Sinead, you broke this story in the journal.ie about the school and the impact that it had, and we heard that very clearly on Morning Ireland today. What do you make of Gary Gannon's suggestion around an amnesty?
I think even Kieran Cronin wasn't going as far as that, but he was looking for, he said in his school, everything they do has to be trauma focused with the children. And he's asking for the same, like the state asked that of him as a principal in the school, and he's asking that back from the state, especially when we know these flights are for optics reasons, maybe good optics reasons as a deterrent, or as you said, to make sure there's a rules-based system in place. But they are being done for optics. They're being done so that Jim O'Callaghan can come on shows and say, we have a rules-based system. It is working. It's the same that's happening in every other country, basically in the developed world.
To send a message, you're saying?
To send a message. So if you're doing it for those reasons, if there's children on those flights, you can definitely do more to make sure that these kind of things don't happen. Like the suggestion from the principal today was, if the date that they had initially gotten for the next appointment was the 15th of July, they thought then that one of the boys would be able to graduate from sixth class and that would be a rounding of his school. That was probably going to be the suggestion from the school, from the way he was talking on Morning Ireland and Tools yesterday. So there is definitely more that can be done, because you're talking about small numbers. It's a proportionality of what's going to happen here.
Michael Fitzmaurice, listening to all of this in our Athlone studio, I mean, we heard this morning that these boys were involved in Cumann na mBan School for 2 years. All their friends in school were upset then when they didn't see them in the classroom and they found out that they wouldn't be seeing them again. It does seem particularly callous to remove them in this way. What's your take on it?
There's a reality here that say their parents or whatever was looking for asylum. They were living in the Red Cow. They were relying on a decision, as Jimmy said, basically that they could stay or that they were not allowed to stay. Obviously, they got that decision a few months ago, and you know, we're all talking about principals and we're talking about ministers and we're talking about everyone. Where's the responsibility on the parents to go into a principal in a school and tell them what's going on? Where's the responsibility on a parent to go to the friends of those children and say to them that, well, look it, we have a deportation order,
you see,
and we will be
Michael,
going, we'll
I'll
be
tell
going
you
out
what we have to be careful about what we know and what we don't know about this case. So we do know, because the principal told us that they were in touch with the parents. But just can I just ask you, in general terms, Gary Gannon's suggestion that if you have children who are in school for more than a year, you know, and a year is a long time in a child's life, particularly in a primary school child's life, is there logic around saying, well, we should have an amnesty for those children, that they shouldn't be taken out of school and deported in this way?
In my opinion, no, for the simple reason, the first thing we should be doing, we have it in our document that everybody is entitled to look for asylum, but we should have a decision and gone through the process within 6 months. You know, I look back to 2009 and 10, and I didn't hear many principals talking about the amount of Irish families that had to up sticks and go to different countries to get work. And their friends missed them as well. Unfortunately, this is a situation where you come to a country, you look for asylum, a decision will be made. And in fairness to Jim O'Callaghan, or any minister, if he starts bending and twisting the rules, well, then there's no point in having a law. We either have the law or we haven't the law. We implement the law. And the other part about this, over the last 5 years, the Irish taxpayer has probably paid 500,000 now towards basically waiting on a decision for 4 years. We need to make sure we put the resources in for the benefit of that family or any family that's looking for asylum, and for the benefit of basically having proper accommodation or making a decision for someone that's going to be staying. We need to make sure that within a 6 month decision, one way or the other.
Okay, Michelle, you're listening to all of that, and it seems that Timmy and Michael are agreed, really, that the rules are the rules. You can't just change them because you've got children in school.
Well, I mean, those are the rules we have in place at the moment. I suppose the challenge would be how long it takes to actually process the applications. And some of those children, some of the people within the direct provision or the international protection, as it's now known, system, have been there for years and years. They're part of the communities. Why is it taking so long? That's number one. Number two is, we don't plan for migration. It should be part of our demographic planning. We are aging as a population. We're going to go from 4 people of working age for every older person to 2 in the space of 20 years. We are going to need workers in this country. We need to be planning for that now, for the houses, for the services, for everything else. And that is the planned migration. That's not including the amount of people that are going to be displaced by by climate change, for example. It's about 22 million in a year. That's just now. So we can have all these discussions, but it still goes back to the point that we don't have a system that's properly planned. It doesn't really seem to be functioning properly. And I think the optics of, you know, this does not reflect well on our system. You know, why are we putting out press releases that we've chartered a flight? You know, that we sent X number of people away, but some of them were in, you know, kept in detention somewhere for 3 weeks. And children had the, you know, I've read the article on the Journal. So perhaps that family assumed they would be going in July when the school year had finished. Well, it seems from reading the article, they had their room packed up and they were told to go. Like, that's a hugely traumatic situation. And you shouldn't be putting that back on principals or schools or communities. It's up to the state to get it right. And at the moment...
How do you get it right, though? What would you like to have seen done differently in that case?
Well, we certainly need a more humane approach. And I, you know, the system has speeded up. And that's fine for someone who's applied maybe in the last 12 months and they get their response, either you can or can't stay. But if you're a family who's been living in that accommodation or centre for a number of years and you've children settled in schools and communities, there needs to be a better transition time for that family, because you can't just uproot people. And I think to assume that someone would have the resources themselves to just go and uproot their children, as Michael suggested, I don't think that's necessarily fair. We need to take a broader view of this. And ultimately, we need to start planning properly, because the discussion around this can be very, very challenging.
Now, we know, don't we, that families that are people who are deported are offered assistance from the state to make that journey themselves. Yeah. Isn't that right, Timmy, before the deportation happens?
And just to reiterate the point, deportation is a last resort. Engagement is with families who have failed in the process to receive asylum. And support is offered to them to assist them in their repatriation. And that's right and that's appropriate. But if they choose then to continue to remain and continue not to face the reality, they will be deported. And by and large, that's done through engagement as well. Mm-hmm. This notion of rounding people up is, I think it's a evocative language, quite frankly, that doesn't characterise the kind of work that's done and the engagement that takes place. So it's a difficult one. It is difficult for families. And look, we have examples.
Can you imagine landing back to any country, Nigeria or Georgia, with children who mightn't have any memory of that country? You know,
no, I accept
their friends are in Dublin 8.
That's painful, but like there is, and I don't agree with everything that Michael says, but I agree with him. There is a parental responsibility as well. The parents take their children. They pay a significant amount of money to, in some cases, to people traffickers to get here in an effort to make a better life for themselves. I get that. There are economic migrants who seek asylum. And I get that. Our own people have done it. They've gone to the States. They've gone elsewhere. They've been deported. They've been sent back. They've failed to get green cards. So I understand the pain and the uncertainty and the difficulty. And that's why we've got to do this in a compassionate way. But at the same time, Ireland on its own, as part of the European Union, has to have some kind of a commonality to the systems. Otherwise, we become the country of first entry for far more people than we will be able to
manage. Sinead, you want to come in there?
I was just going to say, if we're apportioning blame or responsibility, where there is no blame or responsibility is on the children. So that's where the state has to come in, because you don't know how parents or family entities can deal with something. So if you have children on a list that's very small, you can proportionally make sure that things like the school is involved, that there is a goodbye. Like, again, the principal wasn't talking about, you know, changing the entire system. He was talking about making sure that there was a goodbye to the friends and to the kids' friends. So this wasn't just the trauma, like you were talking about. You know, it wasn't about being rounded up, but there was a sense from the community in the IPAS centre that that was happening, and then there was a sense in the school that something very traumatic had happened. So even if you just take the individual family, yes, everything might have been done as it should have been done, but the impact on the wider community is what we're talking about here. And that's the thing that needs to be improved on.
The first words out of the principal's mouth this morning on Morning Ireland were, we need deportation. So he's not against the principle of it. It was how it was done in this case from his perspective, having to deal with the children who don't understand why it happened.
Yeah, and I'm sure more can be done in relation to informing. It probably doesn't make it any easier, that's for sure. But just for completeness.
But if you can,
well, it's
communication and planning, I think it does make it somewhat easier. I want to move on now to the fallout from this week's RT Investigates documentary into two nursing homes, because that certainly continues today. And anyone who watched that was horrified by what they saw on their screens earlier in the week. Michael Fitzmaurice, I'll come to you first on this one. I mean, we're hearing now about, you know, or there have been suggestions that there should be an audit of every nursing home in the state. Is that needed, do you think, given what we saw during the week?
Well, I think, first of all, my heart goes out to, when you look at that programme the other night, to the people that were affected by this and their families. It is horrendous, first of all. I think that needs to be said. I think that We have an audit in HICWA, but what is this audit that they're doing? Are they more concerned about what someone wants in life after when they pass away, or are they more concerned about making sure that a nursing home is ran right? And I think that we need to do that. Unfortunately, in this country, we seem to have a big hullabaloo after something happens. We've seen, you know, down through the years, unfortunately, about 20 years ago, I think the same thing, Claire, you'd have highlighted it before, in nursing homes.
Yeah, it was there, and I think it needs to be 2005, I think, but
yeah, I think it needs to be said. And there, no more than, like, there was a Primetime Investigates into creches. And let's be very clear. Not all, there's an awful lot of creches around the country that everyone's kids are looked after in, and they're the finest. But there can be also cowboys in business as well. And on top of that, in the line of the nursing homes, an awful lot of family run nursing homes that do an excellent job. But I do think we need to learn ferocious lessons out of this. And in my opinion, with what we saw the other night, Claire, there is laws there in relation to elder abuse. And if that wasn't elder abuse,
we don't have,
I don't know what was.
Adult safeguarding legislation.
We do have elder, if there is laws in relation to elder abuse. Mm-hmm.
But we were told, Timmy Dooley, by Mary Harney back in 2007, that after Lee's Cross, I can't guarantee, she said, that this won't happen again, but I can guarantee it'll be picked up quickly. Now, it took RT Investigates to pick this up, which we saw during the week.
Yeah, and I think, and I've said it before, RT Investigates have done remarkable work here and elsewhere, but it's based on whistleblowers at the end of the day. And what we do have is a very strong controls in the state that has provides access to whistleblowers to identify information. It's not possible to have an inspector from HICWA in every nursing home on every day, particularly with the volume of turnover of staff, etc. But there is a commitment to strengthening the existing legislation that's there on the adult safeguarding, and it's in the programme for government, and the intention is to bring a bill.
But one of these places, the place in Glasnevin, Beneven, passed the HICWA inspection.
And it can. You see, there are certain metrics that are there in a HICWA audit in terms of procedures and processes.
That's not working.
But Claire, with respect, it's down to the behaviour of a staff member on any one day. It's not possible to, no more than in anywhere in society, to have somebody's work shadowed. Where wrongdoing is identified by somebody within, either that has authority within the nursing home or within the general population, that they have the capacity to report it. For me, what's important is that when something is reported, that it's addressed quickly.
Sorry, we can't help it if an organisation or an institution can hoodwink an auditor. We can't help that.
No, we can. No, but the point is, when you go through the details of what was seen in that programme, it was the behaviour of certain members of staff in the way.
No, gloves, sharing of gloves, incontinence pads, not being ordered, not enough sheets. That's not behaviour of staff. And I know there's an issue with behaviour of staff and the staffing levels, but that's management of a place.
And it's management for sure. But on the time when an audit is done, if everything is in order, that's as much as the HICWA representative who's on site on the day that the audit is done. If the pads are in place, everything's in place. And I know of many cases that have been,
If that can work on that one day, then the auditing system's not working and it's not good enough.
Well, I think, as you know, with any audit, Claire, it's a moment in time. It's a snapshot in terms of where things are at on the point that you do it. And you look for certain trends. And that's why there's follow-up audits. And if there's any issue that doesn't seem to have been properly recorded or reported, it's identified. But for sure, there has to be learnings from this.
So we're agreeing now that the audit system isn't working.
Well, it has, in this case, it clearly has left some gaps which will have to be picked up elsewhere. And there's no doubt in that. But I don't want to undermine the good work that HICWA do too. And they do really good stuff. And they have held many organisations and many state institutions as well to account and have ensured that practices and procedures have changed and changed significantly. Mm-hmm. Of course,
but the problem we have now is that when HICWA tell us 87% of the nursing homes that they have inspected have passed that test, they've ticked the box, that we're sort of worried about whether to accept that or not, because Ben Even was one of those 87%.
I accept. And so therefore, you know, maybe a trial back on some of the audits that have been done in those facilities to see if it had reached the standard that was required in relation to the supply of PPE and other materials. But for me, those are issues that can be measured and monitored and can be addressed and can be, you know, you can ensure compliance with that. For me, the big issue, though, is the misbehaviour of staff and the way in which they treat and manage patients. Okay. And that's where we've got to be.
Sinead, do you want to come in, Michelle?
I think what RTÉ exposed was more than employee behaviour. It was systemic problems that led to employee behaviour. You had an excellent discussion with Liam Doran and Ronan Collins about this, Claire, and I had the same opinion of you, that I was torn between being really angry about the behaviour of some of the employees, but also feeling like they're in this system and they're worn down by it. And one of them even said it, like, you know, you can't actually keep doing the job at the level that you're doing it. You just have to get in and get out and get the job done.
Doesn't excuse all of it.
It totally doesn't. But you can see, even in that snippet, you could see the tension that is there, that it's a systemic problem that is leading to that behaviour, not that there are these people going in to perform elder abuse, as Michael was saying. So I think you have to understand it in that bigger picture, and that's where most people are worried about other nursing homes as well.
Is that, yes, Michael, see, the bottom line on this is congregated care with the aim of making a profit at the end of it. That is that not the problem, Michael?
Well, not necessarily so. There are some fine nursing homes around the country, but there is, obviously we have seen what has gone on there. But there's a few things I want to touch on. HICWA's responsibility, well, part of the responsibility in their audit is for the training of people that they're up to the standard of in the line of training. Obviously, that wasn't the case in what we looked at the other night. How come that has been bypassed? Second of all, should we be telling someone we're calling to them tomorrow or the next day? Why isn't there during the night visits by HICWA? Why isn't there on the spot visits? Why isn't, you know, there more? I saw a nursing home where they were more concerned about a green area. And in all fairness to the lovely people that were within it, a lot of them weren't able to go out to the green area. But that's what HICWA were more concerned about than actually looking at the care for the people that's the most important. Or they may, if there was an upstairs in it, they will put you through hell and back. Whereas they need to look at the day-to-day care of every person that's in that they're happy, that they're well looked after, and they get whatever resources and whatever help that they deserve and they need.
Michelle, you wanted to come in on that.
Yes, and, you know, I do think it exposes more than just a staff issue. It is a systemic issue. I mean, why are incontinence pads being rationed? Why is there not enough PPE? The state pays an awful lot of money to these private companies that are running a lot of these, not every nursing home, but the ones that are run by them. They pay a substantial amount of money to them through the Fair Deal scheme. We still don't have safeguarding legislation. We still don't have a statutory right to home care. We've been waiting for that for 8 years or more now. There's a commitment again in this programme for government, but where is it? You have people who are waiting on home help hours. We're ageing as a population. So we have to find a way to help people age well at home. And as you say, think about, is a congregated setting the best place for someone? And if it is, then make sure it runs properly. But we're not even doing the planning about, okay, where is the funding for a statutory right to home care going to come from? Where are the people who are going to provide those home care hours? How are we going to support people to age well at home? Are we going to invest in universal design, for example, so homes can be adapted? Are we ensuring that we've social housing units for older people? Are we planning for that? And we're not planning for that at the moment. And, you know, it just feels like The programme exposed, it was a really excellent programme, but why are we focusing on just the actions of a couple of workers when the problem is clearly much larger? And the problem is, as you said, if 87% of nursing homes have passed an inspection, Well, I would be very concerned if I was in a situation that I had to think about an elderly relative going into a home. And in fact, I had an elderly relative in Ben Evan Lodge, not Ben Evan Manor. And I was really shocked when I saw the headline. And I checked the HICWA inspections and Ben Evan Lodge had passed the HICWA inspection. Now, unfortunately, she has passed away. But me and the rest of the family are now really concerned as to, well, what kind of treatment? Because at the time during COVID, we couldn't go and visit. And it's really troubling for families.
Yeah, well, I think everybody has had those thoughts as a result of that, because it does, I suppose, engender a fear, doesn't it, around if you don't have a relative in a nursing home now, if it's coming in the future, what do you do? What are the choices that you make?
And what are they complying with? And I think that's the biggest question people will have now when they're looking at HICWA reports. And like Michael said, if you have a child in childcare, you look at all the reports, the inspection reports about a creche, but you have very little choice. You might look at an inspection report, see things you don't like, but it's the only place you have. And it's the same with elder care as well, that you don't have very much choice. It's very, very expensive for people, or it's very time consuming in terms of getting into the Fair Deal scheme. And you're looking at, right, well, what is, if they're HICWA compliant, what does that actually mean? And if we're going to go down the route and continue going down the route of for-profit care for children and for elderly people in our society, then what we need to be compliant with needs to be a lot more robust than what's currently there.
Is that the problem here, Timmy? The whole problem? Like, you have people, taxpayers are funding this up to €1,500 a week. The residents are handing over a portion of their homes that they've probably fought and worked hard for over a lifetime to buy, to pay for their care. And it's just not good enough. And the root of the whole thing is that it's provided privately by companies and individuals who are doing it for profit.
Yeah, but I think if the suggestion is that the for-profit piece is causing the issue, I'd have to dispute that.
Well, why else wouldn't they be buying incontinence pads?
But with respect, we've had very serious issues in state-owned institutions where they're not for profit, or in the not-for-profit sector, which are oftentimes community-focused or charitable status, etc. So I don't agree that it's the profit piece that's wrong here. I think that
if they're state-run, at least you can keep a closer eye on them, you know?
I'm not so sure about that. Quite frankly, that hasn't been my experience over the years. By and large, I have seen that it's about management at the end of the day. Because I think the few bob that you'd save by not having the incontinent pads in place is small in the overall scheme of things. I think it's poor management, and I think we all agree that we have to have better controls. And I think there are significant learnings from this programme and from what has been identified. And it seems to be almost an iterative process, that every time something gets flagged, there's a new regime of inspections and we sort problems like this. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the public service broadcasting, it has been a very significant assistance to the state, to HICWA. And I think also in giving confidence to people in the longer run to know that this kind of behaviour, this kind of poor management will be exposed.
You'd
because, well, I think it will. And I think that the recognition of the capacity of whistleblowers to make protected disclosures in some cases, or just to inform, should be a very strong signal to anybody who's not managing their operation in an appropriate and in an effective way.
All right, listen, we've just a couple of minutes left and I just want to talk about Donald Trump and Elon Musk, because we're watching with interest for the next instalment in this terrible row that the two have had. Michael, who's going to win, Elon or Donald?
I don't know, because look at those two guys with two big egos, both of them. I think that Musk has a problem. If you read up, I think it's $1.5 trillion, the new tax proposals that Donald Trump will do on his electric cars. And the one thing I can never understand about America is that if you have a good row, or what we'd call a good bollocking with someone, you mightn't talk to them for a few days. What I cannot fathom in America, Donald Trump, say when Zelensky went over, he basically booted him out the door, and the following day then he was calling him a great guy. So yeah. Jesus, I don't know how they
operate. And they're going to have a chat today, and oh, to be a fly on the line, right? Yeah. To listen to what's going to happen.
Like, it was only February when Musk was saying, like, I love Donald Trump as much as a straight man can love another man. You know, we say it over and over again. Donald Trump is the best producer of bad reality TV. And he's just like, when you saw him in the chair, like sitting there beside you know, his visitor, and he's, you know, it looked like Big Brother back
Friedrich
in the
Merz,
day.
Who we've all fallen, forgotten about, yeah. Actually, the German Chancellor, who was on a very important visit for his country and for Europe and for Ukraine. Nobody's talking anything about that. It's all about the
It reminded me of Big Brother back in the day where, they'd have a conversation. Big Brother would call you in and you'd have to sit in the chair and then talk about the person. That's what he was doing. Mm-hmm. It's like, this is, I'll give my 10 minutes now on
Timmy,
Elon Musk.
You've 20 seconds to tell us who's going to win in the big battle.
Well, I think the bromance is certainly over.
It's done.
I suspect the president will win out on this one. He has the levers that I think can chasten. Mr. Musk, to be quite honest.
Elon knows where the bodies are buried. I have to leave it there. Thank you so much. We have a little ad break to take.